Our Project Milwaukee series on barriers to achievement in MPS continues on Lake Effect Now. I'm Bonnie North. Before the break, we heard from education pundit Diane Ravitch, who says that school choice, once championed as the answer towards school reform, is actually hurting our public schools. Cities across the country have looked to ours to see how Milwaukee's big experiment with school choice, including voucher schools and independently run charter schools, impacts student achievement. Last month, a comprehensive study was released by the national research group, the School Choice Demonstration Project, on the Milwaukee Parental Choice Program. The study doesn't go so far as to suggest that school choice is hurting MPS students, as Ravitch argues, but it also doesn't show vast gains made by voucher students over traditional MPS students. Education policy researcher John Witte of the University of Wisconsin is studying the long-term effects of the Milwaukee voucher program with a project. Witte tells Lake Effect Stephanie Lecce more about the study's results and discusses school choice in the context of teachers.
There's very little difference between the two after 2 years of growth, after 3 years of study. The results are very similar between the two in terms of the growth that they've made in those 2 years. That's true for both reading and math scores as well. And we've done this with a number of different models and different ways to look at the data in terms of different descriptive statistics and others, and it still holds up that they're very similar in terms of standardized score achievement.
Because of the, if you want to say, lack of progress that we've seen in the school choice program, some are changing their views of school choice and school reform here in Milwaukee. In fact, Diane Ravitch, a former school choice heavyweight, in her new book is arguing that vouchers and choice are hurting traditional public schools. Is it time that we reevaluate how we're, quote, reforming schools?
First of all, I don't know if Ravitch was ever a choice heavyweight. She's waffled on that issue for a long time. Now it looks like she's waffling away from it. And she's also misstated what's going on in Milwaukee, actually, in several different cases.
Well, please correct us.
Well, she said there were no differences in charter schools, for example, and she's not reading the reading right. She's quoting the wrong authors for the wrong reports. It's just she's not really doing her homework very well. But that's a point aside. There are other aspects to the choice movement than simply achievement scores. One of the things we're studying, and we haven't got the data yet, but we're going to get it very soon, it's never been looked at in terms of vouchers anywhere in the country, is the attainment levels, or specifically who graduates from high school. And this study was designed in 2006 to sample every voucher kid who was in ninth grade at that time, and to track them through to see if we can get a determination, and also the match sample of MPS kids, to determination of how many people are graduating from high school in each sector, public and private. That graduation is occurring in the next month, so we don't have that data yet for the first 4 years, and we're going to also do that for 5 years, because some kids don't graduate in 4 years, but they graduate either in 4.5 or in 5 years. And we're also going to track through an eighth grade group that will have a four-year graduation rate. So a year from now, we should have, or a little longer than that, we should have some very good information on what I consider to be more important than achievement test scores, and that's who graduates from high school and who does not. There's a huge amount of information in the literature that says that graduating from high school, what they call the sheepskin effect, has a big positive impact on students. It's not only an impact in terms of lifestyles and behaviors, it's also a big impact on lifetime income. So we're very interested in seeing those results to go along with the student achievement results, which are based, again, on standardized tests and standardized tests only. There are also some other differences in the voucher program, and that is that we also do other things. We've been surveying parents for many years and in both of these sectors, and we found the same thing in 1990-95 that we're finding now, and that is that there's a satisfaction level that appears higher with the voucher parents to some degree. They find the schools, they report that the schools, for example, they believe are safer and that the quality of instruction is better. Now, that could be partly a halo effect because they've made a choice into those schools, and so they're kind of reacting in that way. But it's been a consistent finding throughout choice studies throughout the country. So those are other factors in terms of overall outcomes that we certainly think are important and we'll know more about next year.
You've talked about the satisfaction rate among parents, but as part of our series, we're looking at school reform through the lens of teachers. And when it comes to school choice, the Milwaukee Teachers Union has spoken up against vouchers.
Well, from the very beginning, the teachers' unions throughout the country have been against vouchers. There's been no teachers' union that supported vouchers. Teachers' unions vary on charter schools, however. Some teachers' unions support charter schools and some do not. I think they see the voucher system very clearly as a threat to them. They're obviously, these students are going to private schools that are not unionized. None of them are unionized, and so there's not a union connection. And 20,000 kids are now leaving the public schools, going to private schools. So in one way, I don't blame the teachers' unions from doing that. It's their natural protective reaction. I think actually the teachers' unions in the state of Wisconsin have been somewhat civil on this subject. They haven't attacked our studies, for example, or me personally in other ways. So I think that, in fact, they've been civil on it, and they're taking a natural stance. I do think it's a little short-sighted. I think that reform has to come across the board. And if the schools aren't performing, the public schools aren't performing for some set of parents, and I would say this about the Milwaukee Public Schools. I've never been a basher of the Milwaukee Public Schools. There are some very good schools in Milwaukee, public schools in Milwaukee, and they're fighting an uphill battle against a lot of difficult situations that occur in families, and in the last couple of years probably even worse because our focus groups have shown that the recession has been very hard hit on poor parents, that they've been doing fairly well in some of the other areas. But there are a group of families that have not found satisfaction within the public schools. And so they're trying an alternative, which is a private school. And these families, if they were white and middle class, to be perfectly straight, they would be out of the public schools. They would be either in another public school system outside Milwaukee in the suburbs or somewhere else, or they would buy private education. But most of these families don't have either one of those options. So the voucher program does provide an opportunity for those families. And I think that's a very important component of this.
Does school choice attract or deter qualified teaching candidates from coming into the MPS system?
That's a very good question that we don't know the answer to. We do know that in the private schools, the smaller numbers of teachers are certified in the state of Wisconsin. That's going to change over time because of some changes the legislature made last year. So over time, that will change, and the teachers will have to have bachelor's degrees and a certification of some form. But in MPS and in MPS charter schools, all the teachers are going to be certified in the state of Wisconsin, meaning they'll have a bachelor's degree and they will have gone through a certification process, usually through a school of education, and been certified. And a number of them have master's degrees. They are not all certified in the voucher program. There's a quarter of the teachers do not have certification in the state of Wisconsin, and some of them don't have certification in any state. They're not a requirement in a private school. There is no such requirement in private schools in the United States, and many of them do not. Now, some private schools in the voucher program insist that all their teachers are certified, and some just don't insist on that. It depends on where they can get the teachers and what the teacher availability is. They are less certified. We're quite certain they also make less money. Some people are looking at that. We haven't made that as part of our study. We're also quite certain for a teacher to be attracted to MPS or the charter schools is they will pay. They'll get higher pay. We're certain of that. We don't know how much it is and what the differences are. We do think that pay has probably increased because of the vouchers in the private schools, because there's more money in the schools. And we found in the first 4 years of studying in the 1990s that, in fact, turnover dropped considerably over 5 years for teachers in the private school because they were able to pay higher wages as the vouchers came in. But they don't pay as high as the MPS system does, and the benefits certainly will not be as high. So on the monetary benefits side, it clearly is an advantage for teachers probably to go to MPS or MPS charters. But we don't know about the employment practices. If you're looking at sort of where do new teachers go and who do they go to, no one has studied that to my knowledge in Milwaukee, in the voucher system.
Has there been any correlation found between more qualified or better certified teachers and student performance?
I just reviewed this for an article that's coming out in actually a health journal. And across the country, there's very little evidence that higher levels of credentialing make a difference. In other words, that if you get added credit, teachers go up in the pay scale for two reasons in public schools. They add experience, so the number of years they're teaching, they get higher pay, and they get more credits past their bachelor's degree. So that's called credentialing, and getting a master's degree is a kick. Getting a PhD would be a kick, et cetera, kick up. There's almost no evidence that actually that credentialing, increasing credentialing, has much at all to do with achievement. There isn't a study that's done by my colleague here in Madison, Doug Harris, and Tim Sass in Florida that shows that, in fact, the years of experience may have an impact on having more successful achievement with their students. So the longer the years of experience, that there is some correlation between that and higher achievement. On the credentialing side, if you look at sort of certified versus non-certified or Teach for America teachers versus regular teachers, one study that's been done by RAND Corporation found actually very little difference in achievement between certified teachers, non-certified teachers, or Teach for America teachers. So that's mixed. There are some studies that do show that non-certified teachers do not do as well.
We started out the interview talking about the Milwaukee Parent Choice Program and the studies that have shown that there's no real difference between the performance of students participating in that program versus students in traditional MPS schools. What can we take from that? Do we say that the Milwaukee Parent Choice Program is a failure?
You got to remember that there was a lot of supposition when vouchers started that the best students would go to voucher schools. Study after study in the United States has shown that targeted voucher programs on low-income parents, which are most of our voucher programs, almost all of them, have not had that characteristic. We're not creaming off the best kids. And in fact, we had to do a complicated match sample because in this case, when we tested the voucher kids in 2006 versus the average kid in Milwaukee, the voucher kids were doing worse in a number of grades. And so we actually had to do a matching algorithm based on their neighborhood and based on their original test score to get an apples-to-apples comparison. So you're dealing with a set of kids that have sometimes had trouble in the public school, sometimes not, but certainly are not at the higher end of achievement when they start these private schools. So to expect kind of some kind of a magic bullet or a magic result in terms of achievement, I think is unrealistic and always has been. So it offers an option and a choice. And that's very important. And for that reason, I think it's an important program to continue. How large you let it get, how much money you provide it, that's another issue for policymakers to make.
Do we know the financial breakdown between the voucher program and traditional MPS schools?
It's clear that the voucher program saves the state money. We did that. A study of that was done by a man named Robert Cottrell in our first wave of reports last year. It's about $26 million a year. But we don't know the differences between exact schools and arrangements. That's a difficult thing to do. People may be looking at that because there's very good data on how much the private schools spend. But that hasn't been released yet, and we don't know where that data is going to go. But overall, the program does save the state money over paying straight public school money for all these kids.
What about in terms of curriculum flexibility, whereas in some of the private schools that are part of the voucher program, that teachers would have more flexibility in what they're actually teaching within the classroom?
Well, that actually could work the other way. It could work both ways. If you take a look at public versus private and the private schools, number one, the first thing is the curriculums look very similar. They're not that different. The private schools aren't off doing zombie stuff. They're doing ordinary sort of regular curriculum. And if anything, private schools may have a restricted curriculum because they don't have the resources to provide the range of programs and the range of classes that public schools have. So if you make the public-private comparison, it may actually go the reverse, that private schools have to stick with a basic set of courses because they can't teach a lot of different wide-ranging courses because they just don't have the resources or the teachers to do it.
Now, the last time we had you on the show, it was right before President Obama took office, and we were discussing what his administration's goals would be in terms of education. And one of the things that we talked about was No Child Left Behind and measuring student achievement and kind of the repercussions based on not meeting those standards set forth under that program. Can you give us an update in terms of what the Obama administration has done in terms of educational goals?
Well, it hasn't done anywhere near as much as we thought at that time was going to be accomplished because they've been focused so much on health care and the financial crisis that the reauthorization of No Child Left Behind, which is really the reauthorization of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act of 1965, is really about 4 years behind authorization. It's usually done on a five-year cycle, and so they're now – it was really reauthorized in 2001, so that's 9 years. And they've only hinted at what they're going to do at this point, and that reauthorization now will not occur until after the elections in November. So it's going to be a 2011 before it's done, 10 years into the No Child Left Behind law. Some of the clear things that they're going to do based on the race for the top, for example, that we weren't successful with yet, that the $4 billion worth of money he's going to dole out to the different districts and states in a competitive way. Based on that insights and some other insider information, it looks like, number one, No Child Left Behind is not going to be repealed. It's not going to be taken a whole apart and just scrapped like some people would advise or some people would want, and that's not going to happen. So there are going to be marginal changes. It looks as if there's going to be an emphasis on two things. One is charter schools. He's Obama and certainly Arne Duncan, who is his Secretary of Education, are very high on charter schools, so that's also in the race for the top. They are sticking to their guns on merit pay. It looks like there's going to be something in the reauthorization probably on merit pay. Plus, they're going to tinker with a number of things that I think I alluded to last time. One is they're clearly going to change the way the sanctions are meted out so they're not based just simply on school scores. But they're much more often going to be based on growth models, what we call value-added models or growth models in terms of changes in student achievement, not just simply the year that they're taken. So there'll be a mix, a multiple-year measurement there. Also, I think they'll change the sanctioning structure around. They may move back the option to go to another public school to a couple years back instead of the first year that they fail. Kids can get out of the school. I think they'll change that. And there'll be some other things that they tinker with on the side. They'll also look at teacher quality issues, which became a big issue in the development of No Child Left Behind over the last 4 or 5 years.
Now, you alluded to Wisconsin not being very successful when it came to Race to the Top. Tell us more about that.
I don't know exactly what's been reported on that yet, because I don't think the reply has been released. So it's not clear. One of the things that's pretty clear is that they didn't get a sign-off, a letter of support from the state teachers' associations, and I think that they needed that. That was sort of part of the requirement of doing it, or one of the, not the requirement, but one of the things that they were, that the votes were given on, or the points system was given on, and they didn't get that letter. That was not forthcoming. So I think that probably harmed them. There's also an issue about how supportive the state is going to be of merit-type pay based on student achievement. That was another requirement. We did change our law because we had a law that actually was written that teacher compensation and teacher rewards could not be based on test score-based student achievement gains. And that was quasi-repealed to try to get into the Race for the Top. But I don't know if the Arne Duncan administration bought that.
Well, John Witte, thank you so much for your time today and for talking to us about school choice and MPS.
Thank you very much for having me.
John Witte is a professor of public affairs and political science at the La Follette School of Public Affairs at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. He's currently studying the long-term effects of the Milwaukee School Voucher Program with the School Choice Demonstration Project, housed at the University of Arkansas's Department of Education Reform. He's the author of several books, including his most recent, The Market Approach to Education, on Educational Vouchers. He also led the U.S. Department of Education-funded Wisconsin Charter Schools study. He spoke with Stephanie Lecce. You can hear supplemental audio from their conversation on charter schools at our website, wuwm.com/lakeeffect. Up next, a former MPS teacher says the key to education reform lies in rethinking the very philosophy of education. We're back with that in just a moment. You're listening to Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio.